The programming on 88.1 FM is made possible in part by WWER Watts members, who show their support of community radio by donating online at wwer.org/membership. If you like our programming, please consider contributing to wwer.org/membership.
Hi, this is Rick Wood. I have the pleasure of visiting with Leslie Mehta. I hope I'm saying that right.
Yes, you are.
The Democratic representative for 1st District in Virginia. First of all, welcome to Colonial Beach.
Thank you. I'm enjoying it. I enjoyed the ride.
Good. Where was the ride from?
I live in Chesterfield, outside of Richmond.
Okay, so not too far.
Not too bad.
Are you familiar with towns that are adjacent to the Potomac? Do you have knowledge of the challenges that they have?
Yeah, so we've been traveling up and down the district, all 18 counties and cities, and talking to people in particular about those kinds of challenges. And there are a lot of issues that we've come across, and particularly with climate change and, this region, but across the country, really, with adaptability, the flooding that's been happening, the erosion of the shorelines in some places. I mean, it's just been challenging in a lot of ways, and of course that affects the economy as well.
Sure. Now, I jumped ahead a little bit. I didn't give you a chance to introduce yourself to Colonial Beach. For those who don't know you, tell us a little bit about yourself, please, Leslie.
Sure. So I am a lawyer. I've practiced for a little over 20 years. I've done a lot of work in the space of rare disease as well. My oldest daughter passed away from a rare disease. And I worked with Democrats and Republicans on rare disease legislation. And I've been on the boards of Governor Northam, and I currently sit on Governor Youngkin's board with rare disease work.
And I guess I will ask you, what was the motivation for you to actually run for the representation of the 1st District?
Sure. So I had the personal experience after having practiced for 20 years with my daughter Brooke, and the just difficult navigation of the process for Medicaid. She was diagnosed in 2017 with a rare disorder called Rett syndrome, and it usually renders you incapable of walking, talking, or having purposeful use of your hands. You develop typically for the first 2 years or so, and then you start losing skills. And so around 2017, when she was about 2 years old, she got her diagnosis, and my husband and I started kind of trying to navigate the Medicaid system, and she got denied for Medicaid twice before she ultimately got it. And we talked to Democrats and Republicans about making sure that she would be able to essentially get the Medicaid that she would need. So I started working with Abigail Spanberger on rare disease research legislation, and that ultimately led me to be able to do more and more of that. And because of that work on the federal level, Governor Youngkin and his team reached out to me for me to do similar work on the state level. So I am doing that currently.
I see. So you had mentioned, and I'm sorry about Brooke, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
That has to be just the most unbelievably tragic situation for a parent.
It was and is definitely the hardest thing. Brooke was 5 when she passed away, and there are a lot of advents on the genetic therapy realm. There are treatments that have come out since her passing, and we're still hopeful for a cure. I'm on the board of the International Rett Syndrome Foundation, so I do a lot of that work there, and I stay close to a lot of Rett moms and dads. But it It's really hard. And one of the ways that I have kept busy, in fact, is trying to take that pain and turn it into purpose, and continuing this rare disease work, working on issues to help folks navigate the Medicaid system. And that's kind of bled over to Medicare and all of those things as well. But just kind of trying to continue to do that work. Disability rights is, that's a very important topic for me. And that's led me to, you know, wanting to make sure that people have health care, the affordability of it, as well as accessibility to health care, which is particularly important in the Northern Neck region, as we talk to people about how far it is just to the, for them to be able to get to their doctors.
Yeah. And we have, you've dovetailed well into one of the biggest challenges that we have. Being part of leadership in town, we have a very large older population. Mm-hmm. And many of them have income issues.
Sure.
And it's going to be true of any town like ours that's kind of in transition, right? So what are some of the ways that we can make sure that the people that have been a part of making Colonial Beach who it is, that they can still stay viable and healthy in towns like that, ours, where we're a long ways from the dock as well?
Yeah, so one of the first things that's very important is to make sure, particularly as the medical bills or the medical resources can be out of touch, making sure that people have access to prescription drugs and making sure that the prices are such that are affordable on a fixed income. And we need to continue to do that work. And it's also a really big passion of mine to make sure that rural areas have the accessibility piece. I'm from a small rural town in North Carolina, just across the border near Roanoke Rapids.
What's it?
95.
Okay, yeah.
The name of the town is Woodland. It's a town of 800.
I'm familiar with it, believe it or not.
Are you really?
I've been through it. I used to make constant trips up to Durham going down 95.
So you've heard of Woodland. So yeah. You know we have like one flashing light, not even a stoplight.
Right,
yes,
right, right.
A very small town. And so because of that, and my rural background, it is important to make sure that there is accessibility, not just affordability, but being able to have the doctors that you want and the ability to make sure that you can have access to that. Sometimes that might mean quality public transportation. It could mean having to have prices that are, doctors who will make sure that they take Medicare or Medicaid. It's important for all aspects of it. And the other part of that is we found out, particularly during the pandemic, how important telehealth was to the health of people and communities, particularly those who may not be as mobile.
Mm-hmm.
And so making sure that all of the areas have access to broadband is incredibly important.
Flesh that out for me a little bit. Why is broadband so important?
Well, at its basic level, if you cannot have reliable internet access, you will not be able to do your telehealth services from home. So if you have to go to a McDonald's or you have to go somewhere else to be able to get that reliable internet access, you're not going to be able to connect to reach your doctor. And that means that you have to come in to the office. Now, some people prefer that, or some people, because of whatever conditions, may need to be required to come in. But particularly for vulnerable populations, older people, it could be an easy way to be able to connect with your doctor on issues that you don't have to worry about having, you know, reliable transportation, or you don't have to worry about a friend or a family member taking you to the doctor. You can be seen in a short period of time by just logging on and connecting to your provider's health care through the internet services.
Is that something that would be available to Medicare and Medicaid recipients?
Absolutely. And so it's important for those who are particularly reliant on Medicaid and Medicare to have that ability to have access to the internet. Quite honestly, there are a multitude of reasons why there needs to be access to the internet. When you talk about kind of the older population, it doesn't necessarily tend to lend itself to thinking about investing in public school education. But if rural communities are trying to bring in more of the youth population and keep them sustained and working and in the region and not leaving to go elsewhere, it's important for that as well. So broadband access is incredibly important. And as we talk to people in the district, we're finding that, yes, lots of people have now started to get broadband access, but there are regions that still do not have reliable access to the internet.
Yes. Now, we're very fortunate, and I tend to be Colonial Beach-centric, so forgive me for that.
Oh, absolutely.
But we're fortunate in that we do have an internet service provider. They're about as reliable as my grandfather used to be on payday, but that's another subject.
Okay.
That's another subject. But I wanted to make sure that people understood the importance of being able to get broadband telehealth services, and that it goes just beyond somebody refilling your prescriptions and that sort of thing.
Sure. Sometimes, there are people who will not have a way to access the doctor's office, or the doctor's office doesn't have the hours that they need. Mm. And the ability to just be able to get on and talk to a doctor, sometimes not even necessarily in your region, it could be someone else outside of the region, so it could be different hours of the day or night, mm-hmm. to kind of give you that gut check of, do I really need to go to a hospital now? Do I really need just to, get some over-the-counter medication? What are my needs in this moment? That gives people more ability to, quite honestly, live their lives and have care that's, you're right, not just the prescription drugs, but care in a sense of making sure that you get the resources that you need in the moment. And that makes it more comparable to a lot of other parts of the district. And healthcare is paramount to everything, as we know. If you don't have your health, you really don't have anything.
Leslie, I hope you will be kind enough, and of course I've known you 5 minutes, so we're close personal friends,
yes,
so I can start begging favors, right?
Yeah.
But if some of your staff might be able to help me so I can share it with our constituents, how to access some of those Medicare, Medicaid benefits that you've talked about.
Oh, absolutely. And we will definitely make sure you get those resources. And I will tell you that it is a personal passion of mine to make sure that people get those resources. There are people who still call me and ask me about particularly Rett syndrome, but other disabilities as well, when they've been denied coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Medicaid and Medicare can really open up a lot of doors in terms of resources,
mm-hmm.
having access to caregivers, having access to hospice care, if God forbid it comes to that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are all these resources that are connected in a way that people don't always necessarily realize. And so once you have Medicare, once you have Medicaid, it opens up a whole new world of care, and not just when you're sick, but wellness care.
So now that we're helping people to live longer,
yes,
we need to make sure that they maintain the quality of life. And as you had said, that you've traveled to a lot of communities that face the Potomac, and you're seeing the problems with erosion, sea level rise, and that sort of thing. What are some rubber hits the road resources that we can access to help us combat those things?
Absolutely. Well, one of the things I think is maybe a lot of times we don't know the particularly vulnerable areas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure a lot of your listeners do know that there is a lot of vulnerability when there's flooding or there are other kind of weather events. And that leads to making sure that we develop ways to adapt. And that include elevating certain areas. And that could mean making sure that we have the flood insurance when we need it, vulnerable populations kind of coming in and helping kind of, whether it's the federal government or state or local, being able to help make changes to their properties in order to make sure that they have the resources in the event that something does happen, and mm-hmm. particularly as we see more and more of these severe weather events hitting particularly places like Colonial Beach.
Mm-hmm.
It is a wide ranging problem. Not just, I mean, people think, okay, flooding or some other kind of weather event, but it is an economic issue as well.
Of course.
You know, and so we have to think about the economic part of it for people. If you lose your home and you don't have flood insurance, or just having to, the problems and the trauma that come from having to be displaced and try to figure it out, even if you have, you know, full coverage.
Mm-hmm.
These are issues that are really problems for the entirety of the coastal line of the first district. And I want to say it's just something that we as those who want to be legislators, those in the community, the folks who are change makers, people who are interested in supporting the resources, the natural resources of an area, these are the kinds of things that are important as we talk about severe weather events, as we talk about the kinds of problems that are that communities face during that time.
Have you ever seen any sort of partnership between business and communities to help overcome some of those issues? So, for instance, being able to create barriers from the water to actually help lift homes up, those sorts of things. How can business help our local community?
That's a really good question. There are businesses that are being supportive. We have seen, part of the thing is, particularly with the small businesses, if their severe weather events, they're part of the community. Their homes may have been damaged, their properties, the people, the loved ones that they have. When it comes to some of the bigger companies, they're coming around. Some of them are starting to come around and realize that they have a significant, even if they don't feel they're part of the problem, they know that they need to be part of the solution for their workers and for others in the area. And so we've heard about, you know, companies partnering with universities. I believe there's the RAFT program that talks about climate resiliency, and there are others that are working on finding solutions so that people, not because some people think that means everybody has to just leave the coastal areas. That does not have to necessarily be the case. We're talking about ways to improve the lives of the people who live in the region, being able to either lift up their houses or support them in some other kind of way, as you were mentioning, and supporting those communities and who will just need a little bit more extra help as we continue to find out more about, you know, the severe weather events that are happening all across the country, really.
Leslie, what will you, as one of, I think it's 435,
yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Because obviously, I know it's difficult to get anything done just being one of seven, much less one of 435.
Yeah.
So what will you attempt to get moving when you first get aboard and how will you help enact that legislation?
One way is to continue to hold insurance companies accountable. We've seen for years in all parts of the country where it's been challenging once there has been a severe weather event to be able to get the insurance companies to help the situation. We do need to make sure that we have federal funding for programs and make sure that FEMA and the like needs to have the resources they need to come in and be able to help support the communities. And there is a role for state and local government as well. I'm sure there have been weather events in the last couple of years here too, where Governor Youngkin has enacted a state of emergency. I know that's happened further down in the district as well. That having a state of emergency opens the door to be able to have the resources from the state government in order to make help the citizens in whatever the severe weather event is. So it requires kind of thinking about the coastal lines in a way that we really haven't fully done before. We need to make sure that that the leaders in these areas are part of those conversations. Sometimes, people will talk about the scientists, and that's definitely a part of it. We also need to make sure that the local leaders and the communities are part of the conversations, because they're the ones on the ground who know what are the vulnerable areas and what are the potential solutions.
So, Leslie, I guess, and I want to thank you for being so kind with your time.
Sure.
Since we have a couple of minutes left, I want to give you a chance to brag on yourself a little bit.
Okay.
What has been your biggest success, be it legislative or being it assisting people with Medicare? What are you most proud of?
I will tell you that, as I mentioned before, with Medicaid for those who have disabilities, that's particularly important to me. And so when a family reaches out to me to talk to me and say, my daughter has been denied Medicaid, and I don't have resources for her to get a caregiver because I don't have Medicaid, I don't have the medical bills are astronomical because she's not on Medicaid. They may have, just like we did, we had private insurance, but that doesn't cover everything. I mean, she needed a special equipment for the baths. She was 5 years old and couldn't carry her weight. She was heavy. It requires a lot of equipment. That equipment is covered by Medicaid. It requires specialty folks and occupational therapy, physical therapy. I mean, the bills could mount even when you have your private insurance, mm-hmm. as my husband and I did.
Right.
So when people connect with me and I'm able to help them navigate that process, that is when I feel like I've had a really good day.
Okay.
Because I feel like, honestly, that's part of Brooke's legacy, to be able to help people as they need the help. And so, and Medicaid is, and Medicare are lifelines for a lot of people and all over the district. And the other part of that is, since I've been doing this work, one of the other things that I've really been proud of is being able to have disability and rare disease funding through the rare disease bill that Abigail Spanberger and others co-sponsored. She, along with Republicans, I was very pleased to be able to say that I was able to get bipartisan support for that legislation, and that allowed Rett syndrome and other diseases to have six figures in terms of resources that go directly to the scientists to be able to find treatments and cures for diseases. And so, yes, my daughter Brooke will not directly benefit from that, but her Rett brothers and sisters, her sisters and brothers who have disabilities, those in the future who have disabilities will be impacted positively as a result of having, in the case of Rett syndrome, $600,000 that goes to the scientists to be able to put towards finding a cure. That's a lot of walkathons and strollathons and all of those things. It's money that's put back into helping those who need the help.
Well, if that gives you a good day, we're getting ready to give you a whole lot of good days because we're going to be wearing you out, asking you for help.
Please do. I really enjoy it. It is a calling of mine. I feel like it's above and beyond anything else. Being able to help people who need the help and the resources, it's part of my DNA. You know, I really feel like, you know, Brooke was my first child, and it's, you know, all of the joy that comes with motherhood and all of that. And I feel like in doing this, and it may sound like hyperbole, but it's really not for me. I feel like I get to mother her in a different way.
It's been a lovely visit. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
If you enjoy the programming on WWER, please consider making a donation. You can find out more at wwer.org/membership.